and conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, it is our annual special for Banned Books Week. Project Censored is part of the Banned Books Week Coalition, Banned Books Week dating back to 1982. Banning books silences stories. That's this year's theme. So please stay tuned for an hour-long series of conversations about Banned Books Week. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're talking about Banned Books Week. That's this week. And since 1982, the last week of September, has been designated as Banned Books Week, joining the celebration of the right to read. And you can go to bannedbooksweek.org to learn more. Banned Books Week, I'd like listeners to know, is sponsored by American Booksellers Association, American Library Association, American Society of Journalists and Authors, Association of University Presses, Authors Guild, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Dramatists Legal Defense Fund, Freedom to Read Foundation, the Index on Censorship, the National Coalition Against Censorship, National Council of Teachers of English, PEN America, People for the American Way, and of course, Project Censored. Banned Books Week is endorsed by the Center for the Book in the Library of Congress, and Banned Books Week also receives support from Penguin Random House and DKT Liberty Project. So quite a coalition, Banned Books Week Coalition. I wanted to rattle off that list so people knew that Banned Books Week is a broad coalition of people that are defending intellectual freedom, academic freedom, and certainly the right to read. This year, as I mentioned earlier, the theme for Banned Books Week is Banning Books Silences Stories. And on the show today, we have three wonderful guests. In this order, we'll talk with Betsy Gomez. She's the coordinator of Banned Books Week. Again, bannedbooksweek.org. Later in the program, we'll be joined by the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Charles Brownstein, comes back to talk with us and update us what's going on with Banned Books Week and certainly comic book censorship. That's cbldf.org. We'll round out the program talking with Abina Hutchful. She coordinates the Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship. And again, for disclosure, Project Censored is part of the National Coalition Against Censorship. We also are part of the Banned Books Week Coalition. So this program is one of the small things that we're able to do to support Banned Books Week every year, as we dedicate an hour to talking about the right to read and talking about banned books. So let's go ahead and speak to our first guest. We are joined by the coordinator of Banned Books Week, and that is Betsy Gomez. Betsy, thanks for coming on the Project Censored Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So remind our listeners, I mean, Project Censored has been part of the Banned Books Week Coalition for a number of years. But remind our listeners, this has been going on, Banned Books Week, since 1982, correct?
It has, yes. It was started in 82 after there was a rash of challenges around the country. And unfortunately, people are still challenging books, so we still need to celebrate them.
Right. So when we're talking about celebrating Banned Books Week, we're obviously not talking about celebrating censorship. We're celebrating the right to read, and we're celebrating the struggles, because there are ever efforts to censor or to, you know, prevent certain books from being read. So can you talk to the point about how do book challenges happen?
Book challenges often start with a complaint. Sometimes it's just verbal. Sometimes it's actually a written complaint. And they happen for a myriad of reasons. Sexual content, drug use, violence, LGBTQ content, religious viewpoint. And with a verbal or a written complaint, libraries and schools are often forced to go through a review process, assuming that they have policies in place mandating that. And if the book fails the test of the review process, it could end up banned. It could end up removed from the library, the institution where the challenge happens.
And so where does the Banned Books Week Coalition come in? How do organizations push back against these efforts? And they could sprout up anywhere, right? Small communities, large communities. What's the best defense then, pushing back against this effort?
Challenges happen absolutely everywhere. There's no particular place where there are more challenges than others. And the best way to fight against challenges is advocacy within the community and outside of the community. The 14 organizations that make up the Banned Books Week Coalition all have resources and work directly with schools and libraries to help them fight a challenge when they arise. Several of the organizations have online forms that you can fill out so you can request assistance. Sometimes it's just advice. All the librarian or the educator needs is just some advice about how to defend a book. Sometimes it's letter writing. The National Coalition Against Censorship, ALA, CBLDF, all work together on various letters of support for libraries, schools, and booksellers who run afoul of a censorship issue. In some cases, a bookseller might need some legal representation, and some of the organizations in the coalition will provide legal representation as well.
Listeners can learn more, of course, by going to bannedbooksweek.org. And Banned Books Week is the week of September 23rd to 29th. So we try to time the show to air during Banned Books Week every year. And so it is Banned Books Week now. And each year at the Banned Books Week Coalition, you all get together and decide on a particular theme. In the past, you've focused on, say, young adult books, graphic novels. What's this year's theme?
This year's theme is Banning Book Silence's Stories, Speak Out. We're asking supporters of the right to read to speak out against censorship, and that is one of the most valuable tools in preventing censorship. We saw it just this week with a challenge in Maine where a group of pastors tried to have LGBTQ books removed from a Banned Books Week display. And members of the community got the word out on Twitter so that some of the advocates, the members of the Banned Books Week Coalition, including the National Coalition Against Censorship, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and ALA again, were able to take action and to get the word out even further, to spread the word. Because one of the most efficient ways to fight censorship is to make sure people know it's happening. Because censorship is more possible in silence. When nobody is there to speak out or advocate for the books, people are more likely to remove them from shelves.
So awareness is a really big part of defense against censorship. And so this is, again, why we celebrate Banned Books Week, is to raise awareness about these issues, that there are book challenges. And in fact, you just gave us one example of not just a recent challenge, but you also gave us a topical example of the kinds of books that are most often challenged. And they're either books by minority populations, marginalized populations, or about those kinds of peoples, about differentness, things that go against the norms of the society. That's where we see most of our books banned, don't we?
Absolutely. If you look at the list of banned books, ALA releases the top 10 challenge books list every year. And if you look at that list, you're going to find that most of those books are by or about women, people of color, people from different religious points of view, and are often challenged for reasons related to diversity, such as LGBTQ characters. And it's important to defend these works.
Well, that's certainly important. I know I was giving a talk at a junior high last week in Northern California. What was fantastic about it is the level of awareness among the young people about these kind of topics. And in fact, some of them were surprised or shocked that things were being censored, that books were being pulled off of shelves. But a lot of them were aware that this was an issue. And our own librarian at the school there actually pulled books off the shelf that had been banned or challenged. And it was a really great way for the students to express themselves about this. And I would say that one of the positive things here was that almost all of the students were aghast that book censorship was a thing, and they were actually incensed about it. These young people thought that this is wrong. Why would people do this? What's your experience being the coordinator for Banned Books Week? What kind of feedback do you get?
I'd like to focus on students themselves. Students have become some of the most vocal and successful advocates for banned books in recent years. There was a case a few years back where they tried to ban Persepolis in the Chicago public school system, and the students found out and were in the streets protesting that day. In the case of The Hate U Give, the book was removed from school library shelves in Katy, Texas, and a student in the district took it upon herself to start a petition and gathered 4,000 signatures and helped get the book restored. So students themselves are a powerful voice in fighting censorship. And teachers and librarians and booksellers as well. A lot of the feedback that we get is some people who are part of this fight ongoing and doing what they can as educators and librarians to make sure people know about censorship. Social media has been a bit of a boon to that because it's so easy to get the word out about challenges.
And one of the things that you've compiled here this year for Banned Books Week is you have a new handbook. Can you tell listeners a little bit about this new handbook about Banned Books Week?
We're calling it the Celebrate Banned Books Week Handbook. It is basically a one-stop shop that librarians, educators, booksellers, really anybody who wants to make a celebration of Banned Books Week can use this to guide their celebration. It has a Banned Books Week 101. It lists the top 10 challenged books for the current year. It talks about Banned Books Week Coalition events, stuff like Banned Together, a censorship cabaret which celebrates banned plays specifically, or the virtual readout, which is through the American Library Association and YouTube. We talk about creator events and give users tips for running an event for Banned Books Week that involves creators, authors, comic book creators, pretty much anybody. You could invite your library to participate in an event. We also have programming ideas, and a lot of the programming ideas are geared to be as inexpensive as possible. And we provide resources. Basically, the coalition itself has innumerable resources to support banned books and defend them from censorship. And so we have a whole list of resources that they have compiled. And we also talk about what users can do to fight censorship personally and how censorship can be reported.
So this is a fantastic resource, and people can learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And they can certainly learn about the handbook there as well. They can also see the lists of books that have been challenged in the past, going back to 1982. And, of course, the American Library Association, ALA.org, and the Office of Intellectual Freedom there also catalogs this. Betsy Gomez, one last thing here. What would you like to share that we didn't cover about Banned Books Week?
Banned Books Week is, in my opinion, one of the most important celebrations of intellectual freedom of the year, and I think it's something that we should expand beyond the year. Yes, it's nice to have this isolated week, but let's keep the celebration going all year round.
I couldn't agree more, right? And not long ago was Constitution Day, and I like to say I think every day is Constitution Day, and we should be ever vigilant against those that want to stifle our right to know and certainly our right to read. Betsy Gomez, Banned Books Week Coalition, thank you so much for joining us on the Project Censored Show today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mickey.
We've been discussing Banned Books Week with Betsy Gomez, the coordinator of Banned Books Week. After this brief musical break, we'll be back and we will speak with Charles Brownstein, the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're dedicating the hour to Banned Books Week, and we just spoke with the coordinator of Banned Books Week, Betsy Gomez. Now on the line, we have another person that is certainly a veteran of working with Banned Books Week, Charles Brownstein. Has also been on the Project Censored Show before. Listeners might remember he is the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and he has served as the executive director since 2002. During this tenure, the organization has achieved numerous legal victories, has been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court, and has become the leading source of education and advocacy for combating the rising tide of comic censorship in libraries and schools. Charles Brownstein, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Hey, Mickey, it's great to be here.
And you have not only been in the fight here against censorship, with the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which is cbldf.org, for listeners who want to check that out. You're also part of Banned Books Week. So why don't you tell our listeners once again what is the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and then we can get into some more about Banned Books Week.
Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is a nonprofit organization that's been around for a little bit more than 30 years protecting the freedom to read comics. And in that time, we've helped readers, we've helped retailers, we've helped artists, we've helped publishers that are facing challenges to their books, that are facing police coming into their stores and saying you can't sell certain kinds of material. And, you know, even readers at border crossings being told you can't have certain kinds of material, you know, certain kinds of manga on your tablet. And so the fund has been, for all of that time, really championing the First Amendment, going to court to protect people's rights, and the stuff, of course, that I'm proudest of is the stuff you never hear of, going and sending our lawyers onto a matter before it becomes a case and protecting people before they have to go to court. So Banned Books Week is a great time to take stock of all of that work. It's a great time to celebrate just how far reading culture has come and how far comics and the reading culture has come, but to also take stock of, you know, hey, where are we on these issues? And as Betsy, I think, talked to you about, we're still fighting them. They're still real. You know, we had this main case that fortunately the libraries stood up for the rights of their patrons to make up their own minds about LGBTQIA content, but, you know, graphic novels were targeted there. This graphic novel about a lesbian experience that was not graphic, not pornographic, just the very fact of it being about LGBTQ stuff led the people to say this was something that belonged in an adult bookstore. So we're still fighting these battles, including a brand new thing that we just put out called Read Banned Comics, which is a guide to ban, challenge, and controversial comics and graphic novels.
Well, talk to us about that. That sounds fascinating.
It's really cool. It's available for free at comic book stores around the country as a printed booklet. But it's also available for free online at cbldf.org or also on Comixology. And this is a handbook that is all about what are the comics and graphic novels that have been most frequently banned and challenged. So the side effect, of course, because we all understand that a lot of the stuff that gets banned and challenged is actually, you know, some of the best stuff. So the side effect is that this is a reading list of some of the greatest comics ever made. But it goes into the detail about how books like Watchmen or This One Summer or Bone or Love and Rockets or Mouse have been challenged around the country. And so it's a bit of a reading list, it's a bit of a dossier, it's a bit of a just interesting magazine unto itself to showcase here a couple of dozen great books that have all been affected by the call for censorship. And so I would encourage folks to go get the free download at cbldf.org or even better, go into a comic book store, get a free copy of it, and buy one of the books that's in here, which I say not as a plug for us. We don't see money from that, but because you should be reading these comics and you should be supporting your local stores.
That's a great reminder, supporting independent bookstores, independent comic shops, right, as well. It's fantastic to be able to get information readily online, but it's also great to go to the brick and mortar. It's great to go to a community store, and certainly that's another separate issue we could get into.
You know, Banned Books Week is a good opportunity. You know, I use it every year personally just kind of to take stock of, you know, where we are on all of this stuff. And it really is a lot, in large part, independent institutions, the kind of artful commerce of small business, the artful commerce of making art as a creative person and being in a library environment where these challenges tend to have the biggest impact. And so Banned Books Week really should exist, or it does for me, on a really human scale. You're going into that independent bookstore, that independent comic book store, your local library, and engaging with the people in your community that have a similar love of reading cultures. It all kind of goes together. Not only the drive towards free expression, not only the drive towards a culture of intellectual freedom, but also supporting the institutions that are driven by individuals. And that's not to say that we don't all use Amazon for stuff. There's a place for that, and that's great. But it's also important to support the folks that are on the grassroots of the reading culture that we all require, because that's a human thing. You can go in there and have a conversation about Fun Home. You can go in there and have a conversation about two boys kissing, and you might meet people that disagree with you, and that's even better, because then you'll both learn something through that exchange.
Charles Bronstein, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, I'm glad that you brought that up because, like you said, Amazon is just the giant of giants. They're everywhere. But it's so important to try to support, like you said, the smaller publishing houses, the individual organizations, other nonprofits, authors, etc. In fact, it's actually been quite troubling. We've had our own experiences seeing some of our own books that people will buy on Amazon. And naturally, at Project Censored, we're more than happy that people want to buy these. But it's definitely heartening to be reminded of supporting local and independent organizations, nonprofits, etc. And also, like you said, having a personal conversation, going down to the local bookstore and actually talking about this. I know where we live at one of the local independent bookstores, Copperfields, they have fantastic displays every year for Banned Books Week. They have author events. And it is a place in the community where people can go and talk about that. And that's definitely something that your organization not only promotes, but you participate in your own communities, right?
Oh, absolutely. One of the great things about working with the comic book store environment, and shout out to all the great comic book stores out there. Floating World and Books with Pictures are the two that I go to most frequently here in Portland. This is like one of the last bastions of independent, owner-operated retail media, and independent bookstores go into that as well. And there's something really magical about that. And you and I, we're from the 20th century, so I mean, we remember the days where you had to hunt for stuff. But part of the joy of the independent artful commerce, again, as I call it, is that people get a chance to really curate the environment. People get a chance to really interact with a whole realm of expression. And that's quite special. And I mean, I use Amazon and I go to Powell. Those things both matter. And I learn a whole lot more walking around Powell's or walking around Kramer Books when I go to D.C. or walking around Moe's when I go to Berkeley about what the zeitgeist out there is by just being in those spaces. And defending those spaces, supporting those spaces, CBLDF has been really rewarding because we get to interact with people that care so much about the world of expression that they bet on it every single week. In going around the country and delivering our retailer rights workshops, which are all about how to protect your store and understand your First Amendment rights, that puts us in contact with people that live and die on what people buy on Wednesday. And they do it not because it's a fantastically lucrative thing to do, although some people make a decent living from it. They do it because they love connecting readers with story. And that's what it's all about. And that's why Banned Books and Banned Books Week is really so important, because to me, there's very little that's worse when you've got a book that somebody identifies with, especially a kid, and then they're told, well, you shouldn't read that, especially kids. They think, well, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me because I want to read this book about a gay character because this might be what's going on in my life. Or there's something wrong with me because I want to read a book that goes against the prevailing cultural opinion. And I see this on both ends. I live in Portland. I have a buddy whose kids are big Trump supporters, much to the horror of his parents. And you know what? Good for that kid being curious about the world and questioning his assumptions now in reading stuff. And he and I still disagree all the time, but I'm sure going to fight for his right to access that information that frankly horrifies me as a person, as an individual voter, because I believe in the right of every person to make their own decision. And I believe in the right of each of us as mature members of a free society being able to debate with each other civilly. And, you know, a lot of that stuff happens in the bookstore. A lot of that stuff happens in the library. It doesn't do too well on Twitter. That just winds up being mobs yelling at each other. But you look somebody in the eye, you have the conversation, you're really going to learn something. And that's what this whole event helps empower.
Well, civilly and civically then, right? Because we are talking about these very key and important issues. And of course, at Project Censored, we focus on the news media. But all of the issues that we look at in news media, a lot of those same topics are obviously replicated and discussed in various ways through fiction. And a lot of the books that are challenged or banned, and comics and graphic novels or YA, young adult books, they address some of the same issues that the news stories that we see that are censored or skewed or spun or framed. And again, at Project Censored, we couldn't agree with you more, Charles, than about having the right to disagree and having the right to access information. It's quite disheartening to see, particularly on the political left, calls or cries for censorship, deplatforming, marginalization, as we have seen recently happen at YouTube and Twitter and Google, specifically around Alex Jones and InfoWars. But there are many, many other people that are experiencing this. And again, I think you know, glomming onto your statement, the idea that people have the right to make up their minds, they have the right to read, to think independently, that's basically what Banned Books Week is all about, right?
Absolutely. And to respond to your comments about the calls for deplatforming, I mean, it is disturbing to strive for these kinds of intellectual orthodoxies because it doesn't leave room for people to grow or change. And to use my friend Kit as an example, you know, 20-year-old white kid, and as you and I both know, men between the ages of 14 and 50 are the worst humans on earth, and that's just kind of how it works. And we get progressively better as we get older, but young men tend to really push back and do the thing that's going to be most confrontational. And, you know, growing up in a crunchy Portland hippie household, of course he decided I'm going to move into this thing that's opposite where my parents are. And for that kid, he's going to go through that period in life, just like I went through that period of life when I was 20 in a different way. And he's going to grow, and his opinions are going to change. And the idea that somebody that expresses a viewpoint shouldn't have the grace to be able to evolve within that viewpoint, even if they stay in a way that they disagree with you, that's not healthy. And it's certainly not liberal to encourage that you either have an ideological purity or you're the enemy. Nothing gets solved that way. I mean, sometimes I think the most subversive thing we can all do is stop fighting. And what I mean by that is don't drop out, don't stop participating in the process, but start engaging with an empathetic point of view to achieve more common understandings. Because while we might be parsing certain kinds of orthodoxies, we're seeing the political system of the United States achieve a greater and greater and greater crisis point. And I think that the people on either side that feel disenfranchised probably have a lot more in common than they have separate, but they're kind of stuck into these feedback loops. Now, you know, this, of course, gets us into politics and not censorship, but to move it back to censorship, encouraging tolerance, encouraging the ability to read broadly and think broadly, and giving people the grace to change their minds through encountering different points of view and worldviews and the stories that might try to be silenced and seeing how they think about it, that promotes growth, which promotes civics. And that's really important stuff.
Indeed, it is. And it's a great reminder. I teach critical thinking as part of what I do on campus. And one of the key things that you mentioned is sort of core as part of the class, and that's learning how to keep the conversation going, learning about issues surrounding confirmation bias, learning how to ask the right kinds of questions. All of these things kind of go together. And even though you and I know that civility is not a prerequisite in terms of First Amendment issues, it does go a long way to have some respect for others in order to just kind of get in there and see, well, why do they have these ideas and where are they coming from? And like you said, if people don't have the right to explore and do that, then they likely don't also have experiences to maybe change or grow.
Right.
And that would be pretty tragic. And of course, that's basically what censorship actually does, right?
Absolutely. People need to have room to evolve. I mean, how many of us are the same person at the age of 40 that we were at the age of 20? I mean, I'll go one further. How many of us are the same person at the age of 40 as we were at 39? We're changing all the time. And once you cast yourself in amber, you make yourself a fossil. And, you know, it's a real concerning thing that people feel this need, I'm going to present in this way, and they close off. And that leads to far more conflict than we need. I mean, we don't need to be brothers and sisters, Mickey, but we have to be neighbors.
Indeed. We're speaking with the executive director, Charles Brownstein, at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. You can learn more at cbldf.org. Of course, Charles wears a lot of other hats, worked with Freedom to Read Foundation, of course, part of the Banned Books Week Coalition, also is on the board at the Media Coalition. I'd like to remind listeners, too, that you're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We'll continue our conversation with Charles Brownstein and Banned Books Week after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. This week, we're talking about Banned Books Week, and we're speaking right now with the executive director at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Charles Bronstein. And earlier in the program, we were speaking to the coordinator of Banned Books Week, Betsy Gomez. So, Charles, Betsy and I actually talked about, you mentioned earlier in the conversation, the effect that banned books have on young people, particularly, and how kids can internalize when they're wanting to be curious and they're wanting to read certain stories. We were talking about, I gave a talk not long ago at a junior high, and I was telling Betsy, it was good to see how incensed so many young people were when they found out that banning books was really a thing. Some of them did know about it and were aware of it. A lot of them were shocked that this was something that was happening. And again, like I said, it was good to see that many of these kids, not only were they incensed that this was going on, they started asking specific questions about particular titles and particular books, because the librarian of the school came in and brought books in from the school's own library that had been on the challenged list. And as we've done in previous years when we've done Banned Books Week shows, we've had the great pleasure of having students on who are on the front lines fighting these censorship battles. Can you comment on the significance of young people in all this?
It's great to hear that story and how engaged the students are. The common censorship thing, for as long as most of us have been following censorship, has been we must protect the children. We must protect the children from whatever idea that leads one to believe that children are unable to handle. And the truth is, the kids are their own best censors. They usually are able to walk away or close the book on something that just doesn't really resonate with them or that goes over their head. And they tend to understand what they're ready for. I mean, that isn't to say that there's not a role in adults helping guide kids. Certainly, it's the right of each parent to determine how they want to raise their kids and what's right for their kids. But you can't make that decision for other parents. You can't make that decision for other kids. And when you talk to kids and actually listen to them, you'll find that, first of all, they're a whole lot smarter than we remember being when we were their age, usually. And they tend to really care about access to information. And that's really heartening and important. The thing that always bugs me, though, is when you see a book get taken away and a kid kind of recoiling, like, okay, there must be something wrong with me. I'll just pick one out of the air. So one of the books that was challenged in Maine this week was Queer, a Graphic Guide to the LGBTQIA Movement. And some high school kid reads this nonfiction book in their community in small town Maine. It's going to have all kinds of information in there, but to hear, well, this shouldn't be allowed to be read, well, that just creates all kinds of potential for problems with these kids, rather than just trusting that, hey, they can handle all kinds of ideas. Even the kids that are just interested in getting a bigger perspective on the world that may not be going through what they're reading about in their own life, it's important to protect that. It's important to allow them to be the citizens in training that they are by encountering the ideas that they're drawn to and being prepared to talk to them. It's not always comfortable. It's not always pretty. One of my board members, Jean Luen Yang, who wrote American Born Chinese, says, as a parent, part of it is accepting that my kid's maturation is the systematic breakdown of my authority over time. And what he means by that is, as they become more independent, it does go past some of the rules that are set. And, you know, he's prepared to talk to them about it. We should have that conversation. I'm sure you were the same as me, Mickey, precocious and growing up and reading stuff just a little bit before you were ready to. And that's kind of how it works. That's how you encourage critical thinking. And you can shut that down, or you can actually have an honest conversation about it. And considering how weird the world is right now and how quickly it's changing, I want to encourage kids to be intellectually elastic and rigorous and curious rather than the opposite.
Absolutely. And that's why the theme for Banned Books Week this year, I think, is particularly good. Not that other ones were not. Every year, the themes are always very well chosen, great conversation starters, much to learn from them. As I mentioned earlier, young adult books, graphic novels, of course. This year, the theme, Banning Books Silences Stories. You go to bannedbooksweek.org and it talks about this year's theme. It's a reminder that everyone needs to speak out against the tide of censorship. And so as someone also that teaches history as well as critical thinking, there's been a long history of silencing stories, and we know the negative effect that has in terms of people being able to not only just realize their full potential, but actually be recognized as having equal rights in society. So this issue of book is very connected to what happens in the public sphere. And this year's theme, I think, is just really stellar. So can you talk to us a little bit about how do you interpret the theme this year?
The theme comes out of the Banned Books Week Coalition working together to find how the various groups involved, whether it's the Booksellers for Free Expression, the American Library Association, the Dramatists Guild, the Association of American University Presses, I could go on, how we all see this relating in our environments. And right now, we're really at a time where personal stories matter and where we're seeing the content that's getting targeted for censorship really having to do with personal stories, really having to do with people in the LGBTQIA space, people in the diversity spaces. And it's important for people to tell their stories. It's important to listen to other people's stories. It's important to understand one's own story, because that's how you become well-rounded and can become a member of a society, is by having that empathy, by having that understanding. So when one attempts to ban the stories that might be outside of one's belief or comfort zone, you're just completely invalidating an entire realm of human experience. And what an un-American idea. We're a pluralistic society that believes in diversity and believes in diversity of ideas and experiences. And to attempt to create a monoculture in that way is really terrible. Now, I don't think that the people that are banning books are thinking on those terms. I think they're thinking, you know, usually, I'm afraid for my kids, so I'm going to do this. But when you step back two steps, you realize, actually, it's going to be fine if you're there to talk to them about it. Society's going to be fine if other people are different than you. This is the story of human civilization, and books are kind of a place that people go to exercise a sense of power when they're not able to exercise a sense of power in the rest of their world. I mean, we can't change what's happening in Washington, but we can get rid of this book that we disagree with. I see it all the time. That doesn't solve anything. It just actually creates more problems.
And of course, Banned Books Week since 1982, the celebration of Banned Books Week is certainly not about celebrating banning books. It's celebrating the right to read. And you can learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. Charles Brownstein is the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And you can learn more about them at cbldf.org. And Charles Brownstein, before we let you go, just figured wanted to give you the last words here on your thoughts. This is Banned Books Week when the show here is airing. And so what are your hopes this year?
Well, I really hope that all of us can take a moment and really take stock of what's happening in our communities with regard to intellectual freedom. And I hope that all of us take some time to read a banned book. If you'll forgive a small plug here, humblebundle.com is promoting Banned Books Week and raising money for Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and National Coalition Against Censorship with a forbidden books bundle where people can pay what they want to get a universe of great books like The Color Purple or Free Speeches by Neil Gaiman, etc. I won't do too much of a plug, but check it out. This is a good place to start with reading a book that others have challenged, seeing how it resonates with you, go out and talk to others about it. It's really important that we act as a community to be intellectually curious and to read things that others say are not necessarily the stories that they want to see, and to make up one's own minds. We all have to have the freedom to make up our minds, and it starts with intellectual freedom and curiosity. So go out there. Happy Banned Books Week. And thanks so much, Mickey, for making time for us and our colleagues this week.
Project Censored is honored to be part of the Banned Books Week Coalition and the National Coalition Against Censorship, you know, doing our small part in the world of news. But that world has gotten weirder with the rise of fake news as a meme, as you know. So we've all got our work cut out for us. But Charles Brownstein, thanks so much for the work you do. CBLDF.org, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Thanks so much, Charles.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with the executive director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Charles Brownstein. After this break, brief musical break, we'll round out our discussion about Banned Books Week in conversation with Abina Hutchful of the Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're talking everything banned books. It's Banned Books Week. The last week of September, we spoke earlier with Betsy Gomez of the Banned Books Week Coalition. We just spent some time with Charles Brownstein of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, among many other things. And right now, we are pleased to welcome back to the show Abina Hutchful of the Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship. And Abina, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you tell us, what do you do at the Youth Free Expression Program? And then let's talk about how you're part of the Banned Books Week Coalition.
The Youth Free Expression Program works to educate youth about their First Amendment rights and the right of free expression, and also defend those rights where they're threatened. So in the case of banned books, that means whenever a book is challenged or banned or removed from a school or library because of the content or the ideas expressed, we rally other partners and the local community to defend every child's right to read that book. And we also offer guidance to schools and libraries that may not really appreciate or understand how their actions undermine students' First Amendment rights, and help them with guidance on how to promote the right to read and protect students' free expression.
So these are all very significant things and a very important part of Banned Books Week. And of course, this year, we mentioned earlier on the program that each year Banned Books Week has a theme and people sort of congeal around that theme. And this year, it's about banning books silences stories. And at the Youth Free Expression Program, you're focusing, of course, on stories that are being silenced in terms of children's access to them. The American Library Association, of course, lists some of the major reasons that books are banned, and so too do you at your website as part of the National Coalition Against Censorship. That's ncac.org, and then the Youth Free Expression Program is on that site. You talk about here that it's not just topics, it's stifling young voices. And it says here, to, quote, shield young people from controversial, disturbing, or inappropriate content. So that pretty much sounds like the chief reason that we hear when books are challenged, right, Abina?
Exactly. And what happens is oftentimes the way in which inappropriate content is defined or arrived at, it marginalizes certain groups, often groups that are already marginalized, right? So as we noticed with this year's list of banned books, and with last year's list of banned books, the majority of the books, 80% of the books that are frequently challenged, are books that are about LGBTQ experiences or the experiences of people of color. And what happens, as we see in each school that we respond to book challenges in or in libraries, is that children who have those identity affiliations or who are interested in stories about LGBTQ experiences and about people of color don't see that representation in literature. And representation in literature is very important, especially at a time when a lot of groups feel unheard, feel like their voices and their stories are being pushed out or silenced. And so we want to emphasize how banning books silences real stories and narratives that are present in our communities and deserve to be heard.
Well, indeed, and the Celebrating of Banned Books Week is deliberately calling attention to issues surrounding censorship. And it isn't even just outright or overt censorship. It's also the way resources are used, the kind of people that maybe happen to be working in a position where they're supplying books or getting books into
exactly.
a school. Then there's budgetary problems as far as what certain resources communities have. This all starts to compound when we start to add in many other variables. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Another function of the Kids Right to Read program is to support teachers and librarians. And in the last year, we've had several incidents of teachers who've reached out afraid that they might lose their jobs because they assigned a book that a parent felt was inappropriate just because it featured an LGBTQ character or because it featured a story about police brutality against Black lives, for instance, The Hate U Give, which has been challenged in several schools and libraries. What happens is each time a school reacts by removing books or by targeting the teacher or reprimanding the teacher who assigned those books, it instills fear in all teachers in the school and in the district from assigning such stories and such books again. And what we've seen is that it only encourages teachers to shy away from topics that they feel might fall outside the status quo and gradually center the white heteronormative narratives rather than talking about the experiences of other marginalized groups. And it's these subtle acts of censorship that shape within young readers' minds and within the community the idea that certain stories and certain perspectives are more valuable, normal, or appropriate than others. And that can be really dangerous for a community because it just breeds and engenders intolerance. So what we try to do is support teachers who are at risk of losing their jobs or who feel like they're going to face professional retaliation for assigning books that are subsequently challenged, and giving them the support of the community, showing them that the community is behind them, that community being not just a free expression community, but within their own school community, and also encouraging schools to support their own teachers and trust their own teachers to make the best educational decisions for their students.
Absolutely. And supporting teachers is so important, especially on that level. Even, and I know a lot of folks don't understand if they're not in education, but just because teachers or professors have tenure doesn't necessarily always protect them in their jobs. And it certainly doesn't protect them from being harassed or intimidated, right?
Oh, yeah, it does not. Especially younger teachers, as you rightly pointed out, that don't have that protection of tenure can lose their jobs, can be transferred into other districts and lose their credibility because a school is afraid of receiving challenges to reading material. Another thing is that librarians, for instance, can lose their licenses. And this is really unfortunate, especially when you consider the fact that they're really providing a rich resource. They're providing students with access to very important stories in literature that will not only improve their literacy, but also help them understand some of the questions that they have that they feel they can't ask within their own communities, some of the questions about identity, about their experiences and perspectives, show them that they're valid, that they are shared. And it's a really important role that educators play that I think is threatened every time a school reacts by removing a book or reprimanding a teacher simply because some parents disagree with the content in the material.
We're speaking with Abena Hutchful at the Youth Free Expression Program. It is part of the National Coalition Against Censorship, ncac.org. I'm Mickey Huff, the host of the Project Censored Show, and today's program is our annual Banned Books Week special, so that's what we're talking about right now. And this year, the theme for Banned Books Week is Banning Books Silences Stories. Earlier in the program, we had spoken with Betsy Gomez, coordinator at the Banned Books Week Coalition, and Charles Bronstein at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And Abena, in each of those conversations, we brought up the significance of young people and students in terms of being on the front lines, in terms of having a voice to speak out about the right to read and to speak out against censorship. And again, I had mentioned to all of them that in a recent talk I had given at a junior high school, it was very, very heartening to see how many young people were incensed about not being allowed to read certain things and certain topics. And they had, not only did they have fantastic questions about the kinds of books, they were very specific about some of the kinds of books. They wanted to know titles. Again, the librarian came in and brought books that had been censored or challenged. And again, you know, when I left from giving that talk, I was just reminded of a show we did a couple years ago where it was young people and students at a particular school that were on the forefront of fighting to get titles back into the libraries. So what's your experience working with young people on this issue?
It's been so rewarding and inspiring to see how passionately young people can advocate and defend the right to read and fight against censorship. Recently, we had a case in Prosper, Texas, where a group of high school students advocated against the removal of John Green's novel, A Separate Piece, from their school library and wrote an article in the student paper about it. And the school tried to censor the article. And so they wrote another article about how their school was trying to censor student voices and how ironic it was that it was a story about censorship. They got national coverage in the New York Times. They were able to draw public attention to this issue and get the book reinstated and also get their stories published. And NCAC was one of the organizations that helped promote their cause and defended their activism by writing to the school and really amplifying their voices. And we want to do that for more students in every community that is facing censorship. And so we provide resources like our Kids Right to Read toolkit, which offers strategies and tips on how to advocate for the right to read in your community, how to fight censorship through petitions, through media outreach, so that everyone in the community can better appreciate their right to read because they're hearing it from the voices of the most affected. We're going to be releasing our LGBTQ Right to Read resource, which is a very targeted resource about challenges against LGBTQ material and the arguments that young people can put forth in their communities about why it's important to have that kind of representation in literature and why it's important to read LGBTQ literature. We're hoping that more and more young people will have the courage to stand up against censorship when it happens in their schools and in their libraries.
That certainly is modeling what we would say at Project Censored is the kind of civic behavior that we encourage. And as educators, we try to instill that desire to seek the truth, to seek out diverse views, to challenge censorship wherever we see it. And it's very important that, and this is one thing that I noted when I was talking to some young people at junior high, most of the people were very concerned that this was an issue, but some of the kids said, well, how does this relate to me? I've never had anything censored. My response to that was, well, you know, there are other people maybe that aren't as privileged, right? Or there are other people that aren't in the same positions, and they maybe benefit from this broader awareness. They benefit by understanding the significance of how banning books silences stories. And this is something that we all need to do. Is that right, Abina?
Absolutely. I think we all need to get involved in our schools, in our libraries, in standing up to censorship, because it affects everyone, not just us and our own kids. It affects so many young people in our communities, and it allows us to promote tolerance and fight against the apathy to other people's perspectives that may be different from our own. And so it's, I think, a real human rights issue. It's a real community empowerment issue. And everyone, whether you're a parent or not, whether you're a student or not, whether you even visit your library or are involved with the school community, I think it's important to express concern when censorship incidents happen, to speak up and make your voice heard as someone who supports the right to read and freedom of expression, because it is in defending the voices of the silence that we defend all voices, that we secure our own freedom.
So, Abina, we just have time for just some closing remarks here. I want to remind listeners, this is the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Right now, we're speaking with Abina Hutchful, the Youth Free Expression Program at the National Coalition Against Censorship. And you mentioned numerous resources here, and I want to call attention to ncac.org. it would be /youth-free-expression-program. Is this where we can find the toolkit and all of the materials that you were referencing, Abina?
Exactly. You can find it at the Youth Free Expression Program page on the NCAC website. You can also find it if you click on resources at on the main page, so ncac.org/resources. You can also find them there. And you can also reach out to us. There is a link to report censorship. You can click that. And even if you don't have a specific incident to report, but just need to reach out to inquire about our resources, we encourage people to do that. And we are happy to share our resources with everyone, because sometimes we lack the language to fight against censorial arguments. Sometimes it's hard to confront arguments that a book is harmful to someone's child. We certainly don't want to encourage anything that harms children, but it's important to be able to explain in a language that everyone can relate to and understand that reading isn't harmful, that books are the safest place, the most secure and enlightening place for young people to explore and inquire about questions that they have about issues that they feel they can't speak out in their communities. And we should be encouraging people to read more and not less.
And as it says at the ncac.org site under resources, then go to the Youth Free Expression Program. I like how you have some, you know, action words: educate, empower, amplify, get in touch, right? And this is a great place to get information about all things involving literary censorship, particularly in your line of work, Abina, looking at the Youth Free Expression Program. Very important work, very important part of the Banned Books Week Coalition. So, Abina Hutchful, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and sharing the really important work that you do with our listeners here on the Project Censored Show.
Thank you for having me, Mickey.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaigns.
That does it for another episode of the Project Censored Show. Our show today was all about Banned Books Week. Again, go to bannedbooksweek.org to learn more. The Project Censored Show was established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. I'm executive producer and host of the program. Anthony Fest is our senior producer. Our associate producers are Dennis Murphy and Mitch Scorza. The Project Censored Show airs on over 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous programs going back over 7 years, go to projectcensored.org/radio. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Project Censored. Feel free to contact us through projectcensored.org. Share some feedback about our work. Last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Crimes perpetrated by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, hypnotized by the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love, we flip the brother.